You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Lucinda Larnock. This is the WFHB Local News for Thursday, March 25th, 2021.
Later in the program, we have an excerpt from the latest edition of Bring It On, Indiana's only weekly radio program committed to exploring the people, issues, and events impacting the African American community. Clarence Boone and William Hosea talk with Dr. Jeff Haswald, the newly appointed superintendent for the Monroe County Community School Corporation. Joining them are MCCSC trustee board members April Hennessy and Jacinda Townsend Guides. More in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Indiana is set to raise vaccine eligibility to those 16 and older starting March 31st. The state will also end the mask mandate on April 6th. More in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Thursday, March 25th. I'm Jake Jacobson. Hoosiers who are 40 years of age and older are currently eligible to sign up for the COVID-19 vaccine. Pre-K through high school teachers and staff and Hoosiers who work in childcare are also eligible. Hoosiers who are first responders or healthcare workers, of course, still qualify to sign up as well. If you qualify, you can sign up online by visiting ourshot.in.gov, over the phone by calling 211 for assistance, or by contacting one of Indiana's area agencies on aging. Yesterday, the Indiana University women's basketball team qualified for the Sweet 16 for the first time since the women's NCAA tournament expanded to 64 teams. The 4th-seeded Hoosiers dominated the 13th-seeded Belmont Bruins in a 70-48 win. The last time the IU women's basketball team played in the Sweet 16 was in 1983, when the women's NCAA tournament was only 36 teams. That Hoosiers team qualified for the Sweet 16 with an upset win over 3rd-seeded Kentucky, a true Indiana basketball tradition, before losing to Georgia in the second round. The Hoosiers will continue their NCAA tournament run on Saturday, when they play the first-seeded North Carolina State Wolfpack. The game will be broadcast on ESPN2 at 6 p.m. Indiana University announced yesterday that IU Bloomington Provost Lauren Robel will be stepping down from her executive roles on June 30th. Robel has served as Provost and Vice President of IU since 2012. In a press release, Robel says that she will not be leaving campus. Instead, she will, quote, return to the academic work that is the greatest joy at the center of our mission, end quote, in the IU Maurer School of Law. That's all for your local news brief. From WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
Indiana health officials announced on March 31st the state will begin to open up the coronavirus vaccine to those age 16 and older. Governor Eric Holcomb also announced that will end the statewide mask mandate on April 6th. Holcomb addressed the new changes during the state's weekly COVID-19 update.
Our statewide mask mandate will become an advisory on April 6th. Masks will still be required in all state buildings and state facilities at all vaccination and sites and all COVID testing sites. We don't want those to be jeopardized for folks who are most at risk, who may be going to do the right thing. On March 31st, we plan to open eligibility to get vaccinated to all 16 or older. That's again on March 31st, so the last day of this month. Our current capacity restrictions will become a localized driven decision. We'll still be providing all the county metrics and updates and whether or not the positivity rate is increasing or decreasing in your neighborhood and your home county to local officials to make those data-driven decisions themselves. So this is local government, local health departments determining those venue and capacity restrictions that are that are appropriate for those each individual county. Also, schools will continue to operate under the current restrictions and requirements for the remainder of this school year. We have experienced, because of COVID-19, because of the pandemic, some learning loss, and we don't want to continue that. And so we'll play through this for the next couple months while kids are coming together in these congregate gatherings, and make sure that we're continuing those guidelines at our schools for the 2021-2022 school year. I said last night also that it was not just my hope, but it was my expectation, and that's just what it is, an expectation. But schools will be able to open in person during the next school year. So we need to do all that we can, make sure the schools have all the resources. That includes vaccine, but a lot of other resources as well, to make those safe decisions for themselves and for their customers, the kiddos that are getting a good education in each and every one of our schools.
State Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box provided an update on the state's vaccine rollout.
When we look at where we started this journey a year ago, it's incredible to realize that in a week's time, any Hoosier age 16 and older who wants a COVID-19 vaccine will be able to sign up to get their shot. Opening vaccine to every eligible Hoosier is a huge undertaking, but it's an important step that will bring us closer to the finish line in this pandemic. Nearly 1.7 million Hoosiers have already helped us along that path by receiving at least one dose of vaccine. That represents 32% of our population age 16 and older. As of last night, nearly 993,000 Hoosiers were fully vaccinated, up from nearly 870,000 last week. This means that nearly 19% of Hoosiers for whom the vaccine is authorized have received either two doses of a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, or a single dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. When we look at a vaccine uptake by age, we find that nearly 73% of Hoosiers age 80 plus have scheduled or received a vaccine. 76% of those age 70 to 79 have done so. More than 64% of those 60 to 69 are getting vaccinated. 45% of those ages 50 to 59 are in line or have gotten their first dose. And 29% of those ages 40 to 49 have signed up. These numbers also include nearly 148,000 first and second doses administered to residents and staff in long-term care.
Dr. Box warned that although the state is progressing on vaccine distribution, new cases of COVID-19 and variants of the virus may be a cause for concern.
While the numbers are cause for celebration, and we've helped enable Indiana to ease some of the restrictions that have been in place now for months, I want to caution Hoosiers that this pandemic is far from over. We're still seeing new cases of COVID each and every day, and we're watching what's happening in Europe with the B.1.1.7 variant closely. More than 1.4 million Hoosiers under the age of 16 are not eligible because none of these three vaccines have been authorized for younger people. While I hope that the current clinical trials in children ages 12 to 17 result in an expansion of eligibility for those groups sometime this summer, it's unrealistic to think that children under the age of 12 will be eligible for vaccine for quite some time. That means that it's imperative that for every eligible adult in their household that they get vaccinated if they can, because that is how we can help protect our youngest Hoosiers. For those Hoosiers and for the people I love, I will continue to wear my mask and follow the CDC's recommendations for social distancing, hand washing, and I will encourage my family and friends to do the same. I am grateful to have had a mask mandate for 8 months, including the 12 weeks after we made Hoosiers age 70 and older eligible for the vaccine. Nearly 78% of COVID deaths in Indiana occurred in people age 70 and older. By the time the mask mandate is lifted, we will have had a mandate for 5 weeks after those age 50 and older become eligible.
On the state's color-coded map, all but one county are in either the blue or yellow advisory level. One county is in orange. COVID-19 hospitalizations are at 596 people as of March 22nd. In November 2020, hospitalizations were at 3,460 people. The state's positivity rate currently stands at 3.3%, compared to almost 17% on December 2nd, 2020.
The Monroe County Commissioners heard a presentation from the Indiana University Environmental Resilient Institute about results from their Hoosier Resilience Index Readiness Assessment. During their March 24th work session, Implementation Manager Andrea Webster said the assessment would help mitigate climate change.
So the Hoosier Resilience Index Readiness Assessment is essentially a survey that local governments in Indiana can use to help understand how prepared they are for the impacts of climate change. And so Monroe County is the 15th local government in Indiana to complete this assessment.
Webster said low-income and minority populations would be most affected by the negative impact of climate change. Resilience analyst Zach Richardson stated Indiana would most see increases in temperature and precipitation.
So the main impacts of climate change that the state of Indiana is going to see are increases in extreme heat and extreme precipitation. So to start out, you know, this is some information on what the past has looked like. I want to say 1975 to 2000, the average number of days per year above 90 degrees was 26. And you can see these are projections from the Indiana Climate Change Impacts Assessment, which is a report put out by Purdue University aggregating information from scientists all across the state of Indiana. So these are the projected numbers for the number of extreme heat days that we might see in the ballpark of 2050. So you can see almost a tripling in the number of days over 90 degrees and the number of nights that exceed 68 degrees.
Richardson reported heat-related illnesses increase when temperatures do not cool down at night. He stated increased precipitation raised warning for developed areas within Monroe County's largest floodplain area. He pointed out some areas of improvement for climate change readiness.
I think there's an opportunity to plan for days that have high outdoor air pollution and then distribute materials to the community on how they can individually prepare themselves to cope with those. I think it's things like not working outside, not doing things like mowing the lawn or running a leaf blower. Those add to that outdoor air pollution. So those are options for educating the public on how they can cope with outdoor air pollution. And the same thing with heat-related illnesses, making sure that the public knows what measures they can take to protect themselves from heat-related illness. And the one other action item in Impact 21 was conducting a heat assessment. So it is it's possible to survey the area and see what parts of the county are most likely to encounter high heat.
Webster said City of Bloomington climate change readiness did not affect the county results.
The Monroe County Commissioners approved an agreement with Hope Alight, the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, for approximately $5,000. Initiative coordinator Christine McAfee spoke of implementation of the trust-based relational intervention program during their March 24th meeting.
It is more than an educational kind of workshop that we've been able to offer to the community in the past. This really is an intervention style. It is specifically for kids and families who have experienced trauma. It was originally designed for kids and families who had experienced severe trauma, but the research is very promising and saying that, you know, most of us have experienced some level of trauma, and this kind of a response, this kind of approach is very, very successful for all of us. So we will be training our juvenile probation staff. The training will allow for, I think it's up to 50 participants, so we'll have some capacity for community members as well. We've sent out a few invitations to targeted folks, but if anyone watching is interested in learning more about it, I would be happy to have a conversation.
McAfee stated the $5,000 came from a Department of Correction grant. She mentioned the JDAI program has seen decreased numbers of detainees and increased lengths of stay since 2013.
We have seen dramatic decreases in the number of kids going to detention. the number of unique kids going into detention. We are seeing a slight increase in the length of stay for kids, but that's actually to be expected because what we're trying to do is not put kids in for 1 or 2 or 3 days, because in those instances, there are probably community resources that we could utilize to prevent that detention altogether. So we are seeing a slight increase in the use or in the length of stay for detention, but nothing that's dramatic or nothing that's overly concerning.
McAfee mentioned their initiative helped create a common language to talk about the juvenile justice system.
Lake Monroe Watershed Coordinator Maggie Sullivan presented a watershed management plan update to the Monroe County Council during their March 23rd work session. She said a management plan would be written by January 2022.
And basically, that's just a plan of action that says, what are the problems and what are the solutions to get back to our water quality goals? A good plan needs to be data-driven, so we want to be using science. We want to address all the stakeholder concerns. We want to get community support, and we want to make sure our goals are SMART goals. They're specific, they're measurable, they're attainable, they're relevant, and they have a time base to them.
Sullivan stated a portion of the management plan was education and outreach. She mentioned signs would be installed at the entrance of watershed areas to inform residents. She stated the plan aims to reduce nonprofit source pollution.
A watershed is the area of land that drains into a particular body of water, whether that's a lake or a stream or an ocean. And we care about watersheds because what happens on the land in the watershed runs into the water. So anything, if you're out washing your car, that soap could go into a stream and go straight into Lake Monroe. So these are the kinds of things we are looking at called non-point source pollution.
Sullivan stated water pollutants such as E. coli sediment, phosphorus, and nitrogen are main contaminants of concern. She spoke of ways people can protect their watersheds from home.
If you have a septic tank, make sure you're maintaining it, pumping it every few years. If you fertilize, use them sparingly. If you're lucky enough to live along a stream, a pond, or a lake, leave a buffer of plants to help filter that water and stabilize those banks. Pick up pet poop. Nobody likes to do it, but it's an important thing to do. And when you're out visiting Lake Monroe, practice leave no trace.
Sullivan said more information on how residents can protect their watersheds can be found through organizations such as Clear Choices, Clean Water, or Solid Water Conservation Districts.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation Board approved a resolution to adopt the state social justice curriculum. Board member Jacinda Townsend Guides presented the resolution during their March 23rd meeting.
And whereas the themes of culture, citizenship, and advocacy are woven throughout the national social justice standards, and whereas the Monroe County Community School Corporation recognizes the priority of preparing our students to live in a global society economy, should be provided with an education that reaches beyond cultural programming to a truly thoughtful and socially just anti-bias curriculum. And whereas MCCSC recognizes that both the National Education Association and the Indiana State Teachers Association have endorsed the adoption of a Black Lives Matter Week curriculum, with the ISTA publishing NEA resources to enhance culturally relevant instruction on justice for Black lives. And whereas MCCSC recognizes that social justice curricula are essential and valuable for all students, but especially critical for students of color, differently abled students, LGBTQ+ students, and students from other marginalized groups, and that ensuring that these students have access to quality, culturally relevant curricula and instructional materials will have a substantially positive impact on their education. Whereas MCCSC recognizes that the progress on aligning social justice curriculum with state standards needs to be measurable at the level of each individual school, now therefore be it resolved, the Monroe County Community School Corporation Board of School Trustees agrees that MCCSC shall reaffirm the importance of ethnic studies courses within our high school curriculum, continue ethnic studies at Bloomington North High School and Bloomington South High School, and it agrees that MCCSC should engage its students with the Black Lives Matter Week resources offered by the ISTA.
Guides mentioned the resolution also required teachers to be equipped with robust learning experiences and resources regarding social justice. She mentioned a biannual report of implementation progress will be presented to the Board of Trustees.
Up next, we have an excerpt from the latest edition of Bring It On. Indiana's only weekly radio program committed to exploring people, issues, and events impacting the African American community. Clarence Boone and William Hosea talked with Dr. Jeff Holswald, the newly appointed superintendent for the Monroe County Community School Corporation. Joining them are MCCSC trustee board members, April Hennessy and Jacinda Townsend Guides.
As you are observing, Dr. Holswald, between now and July 1st of 2021, are there any observations that you've gleaned thus far that you want to share your opinions on some things? And then keep in mind, too, if you wish to care on how things are going in Kokomo, you can share on both sides there.
Great. Well, thank you again for having me on the show. I look forward to the conversation as well. You know, when we had a discussion about having this conversation, I told you that I know more about Kokomo than I do about Monroe County, and that's rightfully so after having wrapping up my 11th year there as superintendent. So I'll give you some insights I see in education in general, some concerns we have for public education in Indiana and nationally, and we'll keep it at a policy level conversation. I can give you some specifics related to what we're doing in Kokomo, but I do want to issue one disclaimer, and that is that it would be disingenuous of me to bring a recipe or a formula to a new job in a new community without, like you discussed, listening to the community, having conversations, and really working with the Board of School Trustees and the staff at MCCSC. So I'll tell you that, I'm careful not to give solutions to problems I haven't fully studied. And also, I realize the limit of the scope of my responsibilities in working with the Board of School Trustees. And I know that April and Jacinda and I spoke earlier, and a board works in concert. So it's working with the board in its entirety, but also having a lot of community conversations. So if I give you an example, it definitely doesn't mean that that's something that's going to be prescribed at NCCSC. So that's the only word of caution I give you as we get into this conversation. I'll try to delineate what's just a personal opinion or thought, something that we're working on in Kokomo, and then what that looks like or what that may mean at MCCSC. And when you get down into specifics at MCCSC, April and Jacinda are the ones that are probably going to have more insights. I've worked in Monroe County 7 days so far, so I have a lot to learn. So they really are the experts at this point. I bring ideas and strategies, but in terms of background knowledge, they'll be probably more astute on those things than I am. But we'll see. Hopefully, in another year, then I'll have more insights as well.
Sure. Well, thank you for that response, William.
Well, I'm going to throw this one out to everybody. We see school resource officers being called upon more and more and to deal with school discipline issues, which inadvertently increases the likelihood of student contact with the justice system, which promotes the school-to-prison pipeline, which has disproportionately affected minorities and students with emotional and behavioral disabilities. So what I want to know are what are your particular thoughts or your individual thoughts on school resource officers in our school system?
I am so glad you asked that question.
Exactly why I asked it, Jacinda.
I have lots and lots of thoughts. And I want to say that, MCCSC is using, of course, SROs. We also have at the school with the highest, at the elementary school with the highest Black and free lunch population, the only security officer that is assigned to elementary schools in this corporation. And that is just shameful to me because the message that sends not only to those students, but to those parents and to the entire community is pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious. But with regard to SROs in general, and there has been some, a lot of sort of movement on this in the state of Indiana in terms of wanting them completely out of the schools. As we also know in other states, in Minneapolis, they just completely terminated their contracts. In LA, they not only terminated SRO contracts, but they then took that funding and put it towards Black student achievement.
So just to talk a little bit about why they're problematic, there is no research that indicates that they increase school safety. We saw in Parkland that they do not prevent school shootings. I think that guy just kind of ran away and sat in his car, right? They disproportionately target Black and Indigenous students and other students of color. They contribute to the school-to-prison pipeline. We know that. Moreover, they normalize the presence of police culture in a school, which is a terrible thing. They disrupt student learning by orienting school discipline to approach students as criminals. I am unnerved when I walk into my child's high school and the SRO is sitting at the front desk. It doesn't create like a positive feeling for me at all as a Black parent. I suspect I wouldn't feel great as a white parent either. And what's the worst is that the one thing they're effective at, research shows, is pushing students of color out of school by referring them to law enforcement. They're not trained in mediation. They're not trained in de-escalation. They are not trained to recognize violence, trauma, or abuse. And, you know, rather than funding programs that hold our students back, we should allocate those funds elsewhere. So those are my thoughts.
Just a couple of them, right?
Yeah, just a couple. I mean, I don't even really have much to add because Jacinda just laid it all out, right? And for me also, like, I don't really want anyone to have a gun in the school building. So, you know, I just, that's another added layer there. And we know that so often the people against whom gun violence is used, again, are people of color. And so I just... For me, yeah. I mean, Justin has already said it all at this point.
What a so many policy questions that are wrapped up into one. You know, we touched on guns in schools. We've talked about the social emotional health of our students and how we keep our students safe. I think that at a general level, the conversation is just that: what resources do our students need to be successful in school? Whether that's the wraparound services for social emotional concerns, or what we need for academics to close the achievement gap, particularly with our Black students. As Jacinda hinted, we want to make sure that we're working to close the achievement gap for our students, particularly our students of color. I think that I'm not speaking specifically to MCCSC, as I'm just getting in and learning about the role SROs play. In Kokomo School Corporation, we've really had a focus. We do have a limited number of SROs, and we work with the Kokomo Police Department, but we've been very, had intentional conversations about how we limit the scope and responsibility of those officers, and really focused on providing social workers, counselors, and other school therapists that would be available for our students. And again, not having some of the arrest authority type of things that seem to be punitive in nature. We want it to be a collaborative process in which our principal and our school staff are available to take care of the main concerns that arise in buildings, and more importantly, to respond to those issues. So I do think that when we look at the role of SROs in our current school district, it's situations that in which we may have a safety concern, and how our SROs can assist with that. And that's kind of the limit. We really have focused on how we limit the role of SROs in schools. So I think these are incredibly powerful and important conversations to have. And ultimately, you know, it's a conversation to have with the community and a conversation to have with the Board of School Trustees.
So this is for April and Jacinda, really. If you remove resource officers from the school, would you replace them with a counselor or someone from a particular profession?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely increasing our support in social work areas, people who are trained in de-escalation tactics, people who understand all of those sort of histories and backgrounds and how to sort of mitigate situations like that, those would be people high on my list. So whether that's a social worker, a school counselor, a therapist, but definitely sort of, because I think already like our social workers are stretched a little bit too thin, or maybe not even a little bit, but a lot too thin. And that causes some of the issues, right? Kids are sort of, then can fall through the cracks, but then also situations which might have needed to be mitigated a bit sooner maybe don't get caught. And that's not necessarily anyone's fault, but it is just a system that's stressed, right? So absolutely, yeah.
To hear the full interview, visit wfhb.org. Bring It On airs each Monday at 6 p.m. and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.